Hello, gorgeous.
I would make a great queen because I am so stubborn.
Well, when I'm good, I'm very good. But when I'm bad, I'm better.
Never take a learning opportunity away from another student. No matter how smart you meet everyone to think you are.
I am dancing a bright beam of light.
For the food.
What's up, everybody? This is I'm Here for the Food, where we discuss topics that feed your mind, your spirit, and your soul. I'm Melissa Ford.
I'm Blue still.
Chantel, hey.
You know what? I want to stop saying I'm Melissa Ford. I'm just Mel. I'm just Melly Mel. Melly Mel.
Like, we're getting street names. I'm Blue Drizzle. What's good? Welcome to the show.
Machine Gun Melly up in the house.
I could do that.
Dang, I need a nickname.
But the Chantel's like, and I'm still Chantel. Thank you for coming.
Hey, Telly. I've been called Telly.
Telly, I like
Sean.
That.
I don't like Sean. Most people would just call me Shan.
Okay.
I like Shan.
MC Shan.
MC Shan. I will not be rapping.
So Melly Mel, Blue Drizzle, and MC Shan are
there
here on the ones and
those
the twos.
Street names.
Welcome.
Okay, so I just want to let you guys know this was not planned.
What is this about?
You're training for a marathon.
Yes, I am.
I thought I was going on vacation, so this is vacation hair. And
my hair was just growing out. It was that awkward middle stage.
Too short
for certain things and too long for others.
Okay, so
we're also black women in the winter, so there's also that as well.
Yeah, that too. So this was totally not an accident, but it was fate, kismet, you know, all that good stuff. You know,
cute.
So
we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, we are.
We'd look very tropical. Like, I feel like there should be, like, a vacation special, like, coming.
Yeah, that's your marathon.
When we're going to Hawaii. You guys can rub my feet when I cry across the finish line.
I told you, we're going to train together.
Are you really going to do it?
I'm going to, yeah.
So here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Ever since I made the announcement about the half marathon / marathon.
Everybody wants to train with you now, right?
Yes. Let me explain to you, as a flat-footed plus-size girl trying to run a marathon. Do not offer to do cardio with me, Instagram models, until I'm 3 months in and can actually keep up, okay? My self-esteem still needs to be preserved in all this. So in 90 days, I can do cardio with others. But I need 3 months just to catch up with the everyman.
Okay.
So
I'm going to come support you.
Yes.
But I will not be training with you.
You're literally in the WNBA. WNBA.
We said that before.
Nope.
She was like,
you're a professional athlete.
It takes a special kind of crazy to run a marathon.
It's only half crazy because it's a half marathon, right?
That's the 13 miles.
I'm not.
Let's not scoff at a half marathon. The half is deceiving. It's a whole mess, okay? It is 13 point somebody's 2, 3, 4 miles, so I'm excited.
Well, I just saw you guys at my birthday dinner.
Yes, hey. You did.
Yeah. By the time this episode airs, we will be well into Sagittarius season. So happy birthday to all you Sagittarians.
Hi, happy birthday, Obi. He's a Sagittarius.
Sagittarian. Aww. I kind of like Sagittarian guys. They're fun.
Oh. You heard that, Obi? She likes Sagittarius guys. Yeah, I showed up to your party like, you know, five...
rolling deep with dudes. Let me find out that you're like... That you've got the key to the promised land.
I've always had very large groups of pretty male friends. I don't know what that's about.
I walked in and I was like, all of Blue's male friends are just fine.
Like, they're very attractive.
What?
Yeah.
I don't love them for that. I love them for their souls.
I mean...
They all just happen to look like GNC models.
So do we. However...
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
And I think most of them are single-ish.
Ish.
I don't do single-ish. I don't care.
No, there's one that we actually had a conversation. I can't say who it is, but in the group, there's one that is faithful. And he said to me today, I think I'm the only faithful man in the group. I was like, that's a problem. The other ones are varying degrees of figuring out what that looks like.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I will observe from afar.
No.
Like, wow,
they're wonderful
he's really
guys.
Pretty over there.
I couldn't tell what the age range was. They're definitely not my age.
They're all in their early to mid 30s, I think.
Yeah, they looked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they looked it.
But they all love to hike and work out and come
over
my house.
Yeah, they definitely
early to mid 30s, that means they should be growing up soon, right?
Well, some of them are actually very grown. Like, perfect example, Obi is probably the most disciplined person I know.
Wow.
He hasn't, like, had a drink in a year. If you know, at your birthday party, he didn't have a single drink.
I did not notice because I was really hammered. Happily.
Happy birthday.
Yeah. Like I came with 6 bottles of champagne.
Okay. Oh, you were ready.
Yeah. I was like, they were chilled. I broke one. It broke inside my refrigerator, but I had 9. So
Wait, whoa, these numbers are getting bigger.
No, I know. I had 9 originally, chilled 5 or 6 of them. One broke, so I brought 6. That's in total.
I brought 6 men, you brought 6 bottles.
Yes.
See, this is why we make sense.
Yeah.
This is why we make sense.
Yeah. So, I mean, you saw me. As soon as I sat down, I was like, cocktail. Nice.
Yeah.
Like, now, 5 of them.
And Chantel got a lot of attention because I told everybody you were 6'6", and they did not believe me.
Yeah, well.
And then you came in, they were like, oh. I was like, see, I'm not short. And she said I was sitting next to her. I like this across the way thing.
Yeah,
is there
fun.
An optical illusion happening? I hope that you're angling it so that me and Chantel look the same height.
Hilarious.
I had heels on, too, so I was a little bit, I was probably about
6'9".
Why
would
you
do that knowing that you've given me a complex?
I mean, some outfits you just need heels with. Like,
yeah, fine. You do.
Like, I'm already tall. Yeah, I might as well be stylish. Like,
that's actually a good point. At a certain point, it doesn't even matter anymore. No, you're like, I'm already going to be looking at the top of your head.
Yeah.
But your party was very attractive.
Yeah. There was a lot of fabulous people there.
Pretty melanated people sitting at that table.
Shout out to Tao. It's always a good time whenever I have a dinner at Tao. It's like, I don't know, like my 3rd or 4th or something like that. But Tao is really sexy.
It was really
sexy. The food was really good. My cake was fabulous. Like, it was literally
was a
picture
cake.
Of me mm-hmm. on the cake.
Looking like Jessica Rabbit.
And right? I did not.
That was a good picture.
I didn't know what the cake was going to look like. I just literally left it up to my girlfriend, Julia. I was like, whatever you think. She was like, what do you want the cake to be? I said, whatever you think of me, just put that on a cake. And I swore it was going to be a dick and balls.
Perfect.
I swore.
Wait.
I swore she was going to get like a really big penis cake or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Well, I need a moment.
Yeah.
Like whatever you think Melissa would like. So I just thought that she would just make that out of a cake.
Chantel, how would you have reacted?
Picture of you.
I would prefer that.
How would you have reacted had a huge penis showed up on the cake?
I would have just been like, wow.
Do you think any of the guys would have eaten the cake?
I mean, it's her birthday.
No.
It's her birthday.
My male friends, they would have gotten up. Like, you know that Malcolm X scene where Malcolm just goes like this and they all get up and leave? They would have all risen and, like, walked out.
They're like, I'm not eating penis cake, guys.
I'm a man.
That would have made me really, really sad. Okay. That would have made me sad. So I'm glad that she erred on the side of caution.
Yeah. Yes.
And did not make a cake, you know, shaped like a penis. Even though that would have been, you know, really, really hilarious. So, anyways, we have a guest today, people.
Yeah, we do.
Yes.
And I don't even know how to start this, really, other than to say, like, I'm obsessed with her. She is my surrogate mom. I call her Mama Sia. And
that's so cute.
Literally, I remember the day that we met. It was literally like a meteor hit my life. I mean, all this, you know, like, just the smoke, just, you know, waiting for the woman to walk into the room, right? Yes. Okay, so without further ado, we're going to invite Marcia Dyson to have a seat on the couch, and you all are going to wonder and know why I fell in love with her. Come on in, Mama. So you have the pleasure of meeting my Mama Sia, a.k.a. Marcia L. Dyson. She is one of the most respected social activists that I know. She basically runs DC as far as I'm concerned. She has been a champion for women's rights. She's been a champion for the advocacy of education equality for all children. She is a powerhouse woman. So let me just tell you a little story as to how we met. Okay. Yes. So back in like maybe 2005, 2006, I ended up on like a panel. I was working for BET at the time, and I ended up on like a panel called Hip Hop in America or something like that. There's a bunch of people on the panel. T.I., I know his name is not.
Trigger.
Yeah, I know, Trigger. It's right now, but I digress. Nelly was there. Corinne Steffens, Jeff Johnson was moderator. A lot of people. Wow. But Dr. Michael Eric Dyson was on the panel. And I was familiar with who he was. I mean, who isn't, you know? He just has a very specific way of speaking, you know, publicly addressing, you know, crowds and whatnot. And he was just a fascinating person. And he basically became like a mentor to me. And fast forward to about like 2012, I think. Mm-hmm.
I think that's
right. Yeah. No. Before 2000. Then. No, it was before then. It was
definitely before then.
Yeah, it was 2011 because we ended up in Haiti mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. So in 2011, we all ended up in Miami at the same time. And I was dating somebody who doesn't. I will remain nameless right now. He doesn't matter.
Probably watching, by the way.
Yeah, well, whatever, dude. And so we ended up going on, you know, like a double date. And so this was my first time meeting Marcia. Aww. And so then we arranged to have lunch the very, very next day. And I literally just, I was just so taken aback by how powerful she was, her essence, her aura, just and how she just navigated the world. She goals, hashtag goals, this woman mm-hmm. was. And she swears more than I do, which really made her awesome.
Oh, that's fun.
And she's a Scorpio like me. Yes. Like it's almost like I was looking at what I could be, you know, wow. later on in my life, because she's so dignified and she's so incredibly beautiful. And she's just so spirited. She's me-ish, aww. You know, just what I hope to be. And so we basically just kind of like threw Mike to the side, her husband, like, okay, so now, so we've adopted each other. Mike, we don't need you anymore.
Right. Complaint of his, by the way.
He got stuck. Yeah, he's been mad ever since. And then we've kind of been together ever since. We've like gone to Haiti on humanitarian mission and all that's kinds beautiful. Of stuff, which we will talk about later on in the show. Cause that one's very interesting. But yeah, mm-hmm. this is my mama Sia.
Thank you. I know you all had nicknames, so mine is OG Mama Sia.
OG, get it.
And to explain the propensity for profanity, since I am an ordained minister, in fact, I'm writing a memoir called Irreverent Memoir of a Grown-Ass Woman, because I am. Oh. And I don't use reverend much because I don't want to give Jesus a bad name in the church.
Oh,
so,
you spicy.
Hey, you know, jalapena. And we can just go from there. But it's really a pleasure mm-hmm. to be here with you, Melissa, and to meet Blue and Chantel. And I just can't wait until we get this conversation going.
So you adopt yes. this? Is that what I'm hearing?
Absolutely. Look, I have over, I would say, 1,500 young people that I mentor who call me Mama Sia with the with the permission of my children.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, no, y'all, I have a chance because they keep me straight as well. You know, mm-hmm. like, okay, you can't go there. You can't say that. But, you know, I'm excited about that because I believe that not so much our young people are the future. I think that are very present, regardless of your age. Mm-hmm. I had celebrated my birthday. I'm 68, so I think
I know.
Right.
Oh, do you see why she's goals?
Wow. I need to get a facialist.
Okay.
No. Listen.
Just keep being you, Blue. I checked up on you. You're doing some righteous stuff, and so are you. So, no, just, you know, people ask me what my secrets are. And honestly, adversity has been my exfoliation.
Wow.
Joy has been my moisturizer.
Right between the eyes.
Okay. So that is it. And if you see the film Harriet that I advocate from, uh-huh. I tell people as they're critiquing it, I'm going to take this time to talk about it. It's not a slave movie. It's a freedom movie.
Wow.
And the only thing I would critique it about that people don't know is that Harriet Tubman lived for her particular time to 91 years old. And she had a cougar trigger. She married a guy who was 22 years younger than her.
Oh,
hell no.
Well,
so you can do your...
They don't teach that in history.
No, they don't. See what I'm saying?
Listen.
So you can do the work that you need to do and still get the rewards of your heart. And so when I go through shit, there I go again. But that's not in the Bible.
No, it's good.
I say in modernity, my trajectory in life, I say it's not Harriet Tubman hard. And it ain't.
Wow.
Okay.
That is amazing. I've said I aspire to be a cougar one of these days. But I love how you said, you know, you can do the work and still get the rewards of your heart, because that is one thing that I'm super passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, I've always felt very called to do the work that I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a narrative that if we want to be successful in the world and if we want to make a difference and make an impact, then we have to do it alone, and we're going to end up as a single woman with cats.
A crone.
And, right. Yeah, a crone. And we have to, you know, give up being fabulous and all that. So I appreciate that.
No, you don't. Another thing I liked about in the film, too, is the first thing that Janae Monáe character did was she said, you got to dress up. And when you look at the history of black women, especially in the civil rights movement, they were dressed up. They put on their Sunday finest. So I'm saying you can do it Payless shoes or Prada's. I do both. I do Zara and whomever. But nothing can stop you. It's not about the dress. It's what you're addressing in your life and your life mission.
Wow, that's
I'm
beautiful.
So happy that you're here this week. Because last week, Melissa ambushed us with Ryan, and he made us feel like we were going to have to get cats.
Okay, so
and eat the tuna with them on the floor. So I'm happy that you're giving us hope. Because Chantal and I walked away from that episode walking in traffic.
So, okay, so let me preface this by saying that...
That was devastating, Melissa.
Let me preface this by saying, Mama, even though I wanted to make this a very safe space for women to have, like, you know, to join us, you know,
right,
like
yeah.
sit on the living room floor, take off your bra, have a glass of wine or five. You know, this is very homey, very...
Take off your bra?
Well, you know what I'm saying.
I mean, my moniker would be then kind of Asian, too hung low.
If I take off my bra, I'm getting a black eye. That's not going to happen. No.
Well, you know what I'm saying. Right. When the bra comes off, it's like, right. okay. I'm not All going right. anywhere. But I also did not want to neglect the guys. Because yes. when I was yeah. coming up with, you know, the concept of this podcast and who I wanted as my co-hosts and the energy that I wanted to give everybody, I really, you know, scoured through comment sections of very popular pages, and what I saw was an ongoing war between the genders yeah. and it was driving me crazy yes. yeah. and I was just like, what I want to offer is a safe place for dialogue to exist mm-hmm. that everybody's opinion gets to be heard mm-hmm. and we get to share from our experiences and really talk about maybe what triggers us
yep.
and dismantle the bombs that are living inside Absolutely. Of all of us. And so as a way to let the guys know I'm on your side mm-hmm. and I want to hear from you and I want to incorporate you into the, we want to incorporate you into the conversation, we have a segment called Dick in a Box.
It's my dick in a box.
It's a
dick in a box, girl.
And so every once in a while, when we need to get a man's opinion, we're going to reach into the, you know, box mm-hmm. and pull out a dick.
But that first one though, Melissa.
So what I did was, and so it's a play on, you know, the yeah, the yeah. SNL skit. Yeah. You know,
it was hilarious though.
I asked my friend Ryan Davis to join mm-hmm. to be our first dick in a box. Mm-hmm. And he's a comedian. His delivery is very deadpan.
Yes.
And he's very honest, brutally honest. And so their faces were collectively like,
we're still recovering.
You guys literally looked shell-shocked after he got
Ryan,
finished talking.
But we didn't...
what he had to say.
No, we appreciate the honesty.
Yes.
We're still processing how we're going to find love in the world that he's... Yeah. drawn for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm happy that you're here.
I don't believe it.
You said that you can yeah. be deep, you can be woke, you can be doing the work, but you can still be popping.
Yeah.
And Absolutely. Lay next to a yep. warm body that loves you at
Absolutely.
Night. I needed to hear that. So just for that alone, okay. I've already gotten what I've needed from today.
Yeah.
All right. I dropped the mic.
Yes, dropped the mic. Oh my God, I love her. Okay, sorry.
Okay. So I wanted to talk about something. Cause this is very interesting because I have another story. Well, we have another story. And you've got to hear her perspective. So I'll start the story and she's going to finish it, right? And this is going to fall in line with something that is very near and dear to her heart, and that is prison reform. Mm-hmm. And you can talk a little bit more about, you know, how you're involved in that currently. But we went to Haiti and we were part of this organization called Sow a Seed. And so I traveled to Haiti with 3,000 condoms. You would be wow. surprised how much space they take up in a duffel bag, okay? And the reason why I was doing so is because wow. HIV and AIDS mm-hmm. was rampant in Haiti. This was very wow. short. This is like a year, maybe 2 years after the big earthquake.
It was a year and a half about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was about a year and a half after the big earthquake had hit Cité Soleil and just like the other part of Haiti.
Port-au-Prince.
Thank you.
That's where
yes.
I was born, by the way. Port-au-Prince.
Really?
Port-au-Prince. Yeah.
We're gonna get yeah. to that yeah. part. Okay. So, I came with the condoms because we were, you know, the first stop. Literally, as soon as I got off the plane, I ended up at a medical center, if that's what you want to call it. It literally looked like it was, I don't know, something out of like the Dark Ages or something like that. I saw a 15-year-old girl laying on a table who'd just given birth and she had jeans on. Like, yeah, it was jarring to see that level of poverty. I'd never really been exposed to it, but it just automatically, you know, that's one of the other reasons why we were so drawn to each other is we have the same kind of philanthropic spirit.
Yeah.
And so we were there to be to work with this organization called Sow a Seed, a Haitian group of women who are based out of Miami. And what they do is every Christmas, they create a fantasy land for children in orphanages. And my God. Unbelievable. Yeah.
That is so beautiful.
No, they had a candy house that was the size of a person's bungalow here in L.A.
Yeah.
Beautiful with a candy. They
Oh my God. Yeah.
White tablecloths for the kids. Yeah. Everybody was so happy. The adults didn't leave. We had an airline sponsor, and they came to volunteer.
Yeah.
We had to do some running errands in between the time, came back, and they were still there. I think it was the sugar high.
We were all, I don't know. I don't think it was even just the sugar high, because it was just the joy of you know, a lot of these kids, you know, for various reasons, and, you know, being orphaned. I think the earthquake being a contributor, and seeing just like the paradox that is Haiti, you know, the wealth and the poverty coexisting was just shocking to me. What was interesting was Kim Kardashian and Kris Jenner were also on this trip.
Oh.
And this was at a time where, this was right after her 72-minute
marriage
to Chris Humphries had happened.
Marriage-ish.
And
could be a new show.
Yeah, and marriage-ish. And she had... she had been getting a lot of bad press because of it.
Yes.
And so suddenly her and Kris Jenner were on this humanitarian mission to Haiti.
When in doubt, go to Haiti, huh?
And is everything okay? Okay. And I was skeptical.
Yeah.
I was skeptical that, and keep in mind, this is not the woman that we know today who is a major champion for prison reform,
right.
Married with several children. That's not that woman. This is a different story. So I was skeptical that the purpose of the trip was rooted in altruism.
Right. It's kind of like, why are you here? Like, is this for good press, or is it just because, is it really because you want to help?
So that was basically my opinion. Yeah. And I was basically like, Marcia, mama, I don't co-sign, but hey, I'm going to come and do what my heart tells me to do. So, you know, you make your decision. So I'm going to let you continue the story, because she was like, we have to give people a chance to prove themselves different. And she's just, you know, so kind-hearted and whatnot. Actually, yeah. And I was like, you know what? I could be talking out of my ass. I don't know. You're right. I'm a, you know, shut up now and see what happens. Happened, mama?
Well, we were also had with our group, Maria Bello, mm-hmm. actress here,
yes.
of the Oscar winner.
Yes.
Petty Arquette. Sean Penn was mm-hmm. there at the time.
Oprah was there as well.
Oh, I remember this.
Ben Stiller was there.
And so was the artist for, I think it's called Artivism, mm-hmm. kind of artists and actors who, you know, were there. But I have been going back and forth for Haiti almost at that particular time, 4 years before the earthquake. In fact, I was named cultural ambassador for Haiti by the former Prime Minister of Haiti, Michel-Pierre Louis Duvalier, and representing the spirit of Catherine Dunham, since I'm from Chicago. So I felt like I was reborn again as Catherine Dunham, and it was my job to portray Haiti as haute couture Haiti, high Haiti, and not Haiti under the tent post the earthquake that Anderson Cooper tried to present it.
The shanty town.
Haiti is beautiful and rich with culture, and so the pride is just overwhelms me. So if I'm going to situate myself in one of the seven deadly sins called pride or black pride, I situated in Haiti, because when you think of the times when we were in slavery, they fought for slavery, won the slavery, not only against the French, but the Spanish, the English, and themselves through the degrees is that Toussaint Louverture, and the fact that that particular time in history that there was a woman wearing an 18 karat gold crown as a queen. You know, and I just resonated with that and the people, because I grew up in poverty. But fast forward to the situation at hand. Yes, I was trying to be more hopeful with Miss Kim, because I thought she was really heartbroken, and she wore boots and stuff because she admitted she had eczema. So, you know, she was dressed a little down. But the tour de force really wasn't Kim.
No,
it was Kris Jenner.
Oh, yeah,
so,
and she's a Scorpio. She's one of y'all.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
We know.
Yeah, I mean, all I can say is that the chick should be teaching at the Wharton School of Business or the Harvard Business School.
Because
anytime you could take a sex mistakenly released tape and become a billionaire. And I mean, I'm not gonna hate because I had a, like an 8-track tape or a VHS sex tape, and they didn't know where. So I could be hating. I could be hating. My mother was too religious. Well, first of all, she didn't know I had them tapes. But anyway, I digress again.
Do you see that?
Well, okay, snatch. I'm happy we all have braids. Wow.
So we're at a tennis court because we're showing around, and this tennis court happened to be the same place where Sean Penn also had the triages and the things he was trying to build post the earthquake. And we're sitting there, and I had taken 10 other women down there with me, and we're all standing in the same place in Villa Bamboo. There's St. Thomasville up in going towards Kinskopf, I think. And Kris Jenner rolls up on me like, psst. Marcia, like, yeah, hey, I get a chance to talk to Kris Jenner. I have a problem. I'm thinking, like, what problem do you have? The accommodations are beautiful, you know. The water you have is clean. And who, you know, she says, well, Kim is feeling uncomfortable with, because something that somebody said on social media at the time, and Kim wants to go home. If my girl does not leave, and that's not happening, because Melissa is my daughter, and we're in a mentoring relationship at the time, suturing this deep relationship. And I said, well, you know, I can't stop Kim from going home. I think this would be a great experience for her if she is indeed wanting to find something purposeful to do in life like the other women. But it made me have this sort of like Solomon decision. Do I split my baby up? So I had to create a special itinerary just for me and Melissa in order for her to feel comfortable and stay. And then because when you're trying to get press for a particular crisis in the world,
exactly.
Kim and Kris were the headlines. And I knew that being a public relations and marketing person, I could not cut that either. But it did cut my heart. And I don't know if you knew that to that certain degree. You might be fine, look that look on her face. But that was a choice.
Because it's a fucking lie. Like, there was nothing. There was nothing on social media. I didn't bother with the girl. I didn't have anything to do with her. And one thing, anybody, you can go back in all my social media. I do not talk about people.
I do not.
No. I don't start beef with people.
It was beyond petty.
Like, you're worried about your girl. Meanwhile, there's 6 orphanages of children here, and we're designing a fantasy land for them to experience one day of joy. And you're worried about her being uncomfortable with me?
But it was an option that she could take because I made it very clear that Melissa's not going anywhere. She's not staying at the other hotel. She's staying in the villa with us.
So y'all can leave if you want to.
Right. And you did end up, of course, I'm not going to separate it totally. It was only one occasion that I really hated that she could not go, neither could the other women, because I'm saying if Melissa's not going to go, the other women won't go. Kim and Kris could be the queen and princess of the day, and that was to visit President Martelly at his home. That was the only time she wasn't really in the group. But we had the opportunity to do things more precious on our own. But I did hate that sort of nitpicking, because one thing, when we talk about, you know, everybody talk about the sisterhood, people talk about the Women's March. Well, I didn't march in that. And there's like over, 200 million women in America, so it wasn't really all about all the women, right? It wasn't about the Republican women. It wasn't about the women who were pro-choice or pro-life. It was about, I call it the bitch, Hillary didn't win bitch march, because that's what the genesis of it. And that's the way I felt looking retroactively at Hades. Like, no, we're going to all be here, same quarters, this one little thing, but we had that opportunity to spend more precious time together, be more indigenous in our travels. Solo, while other girls went elsewhere, and we stayed behind that particular day, even with the other group of women who were African American.
You scared her, Melissa. You scared her. There's nothing more frightening than an unashamed black woman who is in the same vicinity as a non-black woman who has been taking from her, right? Because the Kardashians, I actually have a very interesting relationship with the Kardashians, where I recognize why they get backlash, but I also think the people that they're helping are more important than the backlash.
Absolutely.
So for the
prison
reform and whoever else they're helping, if you're going to help people who need help in that moment, that's not the time to write a think piece, right? Because they need that help. So if you need to be freed from jail or you need services and someone's providing a service, I don't think that's the time to have those personal feelings. But as someone who has kind of mined black womanhood, the Kardashians, let's be honest, they mine black women with like precious gems. And then you have a black woman who can't be tamed. and who's going to speak her mind.
Two of us.
You both represent what scares them the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because unashamed black women are the ones who come for their necks, because you're like, you're the facsimile, I'm the original.
Mm. Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
And so she didn't want the original.
That's going on a static graphic, yes, honey.
Right. Like, you're the facsimile. And so I always say, when real is in the room, fake gets nervous.
That's right.
That's going on a static graphic,
that's why
too.
You made her nervous.
Exactly,
you didn't have to write a tweet. Your mere existence was enough of a threat for her.
Let me tell you what the real problem was. Ooh. She was upset that we dated the same guy.
I knew it was a man.
Listen,
there had to be a man.
No, but and what's ridiculous is I dumped him and they dated way later. And so I was just like, really? Is this really about him? He's nothing to write home about, okay? And we don't even need to talk about who he is, because he is now, you know, married and whatnot. So
and watching as well.
It doesn't even matter. But I'm just like, that's really what like the issue is. It's a form. It's really insecurity. Yeah. And I'm not worried about you. I'm here for the kids. I'm here because my mama introduced me to these fabulous people, and this is a like-minded project that we all are, you know, invested in. You're here for some shady ass reasons.
Yeah. And what I love about what you said is the fact that we can't be selective in our women's empowerment. We need to look at all women and be like, okay, because you're a woman, I can disagree with you, but I also believe in your right to be empowered.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I don't have to like you for that reason. Yeah. You deserve that.
One of my biggest issues is when women, you know, kind of package, you know, this whole women empowerment activism, you know, around just cliquishness and elitism.
It's very clique.
It pisses me off, because I'm like, you're a fraud. Stop it right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's a laundry list of chicks that I could come for right now.
Ooh,
but oops. So I want to know your perspective, because like you're like, you know, the kind of like the heartbeat of women's activism on a high level in DC. I mean, like that's literally like the nucleus, you know.
Why do you work globally? But I want to get one thing straight. I am a Scorpio woman.
Yes, she is.
And somebody tried to roll up on me saying, I thought you were for women, but you did so and so. I said, well, let's get this straight. I do know some bitches, and I think you're one. I'm not for everyone.
Okay, so I'm
every woman, but I'm not necessarily for every woman, because I don't believe that our genitalia dictates. Okay, our genitalia does not dictate our moral compass or our character.
Speak on it.
It's about that. Okay, yeah. I do know some men, and not saying that they're more feminist, but they have a more spiritual heart than a whole lot of women that I know. Because when you see the mean spiritedness that's in high schools and taking social medias and girls beating down girls for no reason, and you have women trying to call out women for no reason, so I'm like saying, no, we're not exempt from that.
Yeah.
You know, whether you have a penis or a vagina, you're not exempt from that if you don't have a moral compass in your life. So I'm not for every woman, you know?
Yeah.
It's like what Queen Latifah says, it's unity, but hey, bitch, who you call a bitch, you know? And which brings me to the point that women call bitches more than men. A conversation I had with Cornel West, and people are surprised, like, that bitch. In fact, my neighbor bitch story, I told her this morning.
Yeah, she did. I was just like, yo, let me at that bitch.
No, you almost met me on CNN in prison looking for a bail bond.
You know there's a name for what you're calling, right? There's a, you know, I'm the nerd, by the way. Wait, whenever something has a name, I'm the girl who's like, you know there's a name for that, right?
I love that.
So back in the day, they used to call it pick-me's, because it's women who'd be like, pick me, sir. And so they would put other women down because they wanted to be the exalted woman in the room.
Uh-huh.
Now the technical term is internalized misogyny. There's groups of women, that 53% that we talk about that voted for Trump, there are groups of women who find so much comfort in traditional misogynist patriarchal like archetypes that they work really hard to keep other women from taking away the status quo.
I call
because
them-
they're uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And internalized misogyny is actually the number one proponents of like hate speech towards other women on social media. There was a study done that said that black women, particularly black female journalists, which is what I am, so I should be nervous. Black female journalists are the most hated and targeted group on social media, but the people who are attacking the most are other women.
Yeah.
So internalized misogyny is a real problem, and it's on the uptick, actually.
Mm. Yeah. I call them gender traitors.
That works as well.
Right. And so whenever I see... like there was a very good friend of mine is Angela Yee, and there was just recently this stupid thing that went on online. Gucci Man was basically trying to sell some albums, and he used her as a puppet to basically say that at one point, you know, she was, you know, trying to solicit
smash. The street term is Sean Smash.
Yeah, sorry, street term. Okay, yeah. So she was trying to smash, and you know, it didn't really look like her co-hosts had her back. And then when this thing just kind of like went viral online, it's one thing for guys to be like, you know, to try and like, you know, pat the dude on the back and just, you know, be like team man or whatever. But when I was reading the comments, I saw how many women were disregarding her, calling her a hoe, calling her a slut, calling her all these names. I'm like, Angela Yee has been one of the most unproblematic people I've ever met in this business. And not only that, she is one of the most professional and the most dignified women I've ever met in this business. Furthermore, she's been in a relationship for 5 years with a guy that you all don't know because that's the way she wants it. And no, he's not famous and he doesn't need to be, but they're getting the bag together.
And he's fine. Nice.
And he's quite attractive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so for everybody to be talking about this woman like she was, like she literally is like a streetwalker, like was so disheartening for women to have just jumped on that bandwagon and just attacked with that mob mentality that happens in the comments section made me so furious, because let me try and defend her, then instantly I would just be attacked, you know,
canceled,
you know, and it just it's so frustrating to me to, you know, to see women partake in that kind of, you
internalized
know,
internalized misogyny.
Misogyny is a good coin for that. But a lot of that thing is like the musical chairs. When you talk about there's always a man in it, when you think about the limitation of, I would say, acceptable men in women's lives that can help really be a complement or supplement to their lives, the numbers are small. So it's like a musical chair.
They're competing.
You know, and you have to sort of realize that. So the conversation I would have at some point is, how do we get beyond needing that man, since God ain't dealing the cards right to us, a conversation that I do have with God about it, when I have so many young people, young women who are beautiful, professional or not, who want a man in their life but have to play the silly, magical musical chairs for a man who may not even be existent. So that's a conversation I have with God. Because if you knew everything yesterday, today, and tomorrow, you saw these women wouldn't have a man. What's up, God? Because you're going to Lennon, your chances of getting a man are like, okay. So we have to have that conversation. And in the midst of that reality, where do we go from here? And that desire that we had, that God wired us for this sort of companionship, if you're heterosexual, right? Or any kind of companionship, how do we deal with it and finding that right sort of mate in our lives?
Yeah. Back to the Ryan conversation, we were literally like, you know, I'm
like,
good. I was good. I was just literally like, I'm so self-contained. And so
Ryan is the
comedian. I'm so self-contained that like I am okay with aloneness. I really am, you know, like I just only child. I'm just very good with aloneness. Do I want companionship? Yes. Would I love to find a mate that I felt comfortable enough to marry, because I feel like we're going to go the distance? Absolutely. But if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
You're an only child?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have siblings?
Ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ish too, because ish. Men get around.
Yeah, Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Mom, you know.
I'm an only child, but my dad had like 6 other kids elsewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, Chantal was talking during that interview with Ryan you have very specific...
Oh, the height requirements. Oh,
she has very specific requirements when it comes to men. And she was saying, you know, God will bring that man to me.
Right.
You
and know? I have to believe that. I think that where I have had to get to personally and with God, I love how you said you have these conversations with God all the time. Me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. And, you know, I have to be okay with God being my companionship, with him being the person I run to, with him being the person I cry to, I cuddle with, I do all these things with. And at the end of the day, he says, take delight in the Lord and I will give you the desires of your heart. And when I look at the word delight, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you. I'm excited to, you know, it's turning over and seeing that text and being like, you know, and so what I have focused on doing is getting to that place in my relationship with God, because if I choose to believe that the word is true, then when he says, take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart, it means that either he will take that desire away from me or he will fulfill it. And so that's where my mind and my heart goes. And so I've just had to be okay with that in his timing.
Is there a different translation?
Well, there's... to your point, mm-hmm. when I was in between marriages and mm-hmm. I was going through my Pentecostal stage and my Christianity, every other week when my children were with their father, I would put a sign on my door, I'm not at home, I'm with God. And I literally would fast that weekend. Oh, wow. It was that time to have that aloneness, not to tarry, as they say in the church, that I wanted God to say someplace. It's just that I wanted to feel comfortable in my aloneness. Yes. And so I could relate to what you are saying. But then after 19, like maybe 3 years later than that, it's like, oh no, I need somebody to touch and feel. I was singing the water song. Give me somebody that I need to touch and feel, because you've given me all these great gifts and I just want to express them with somebody.
I'm on somebody.
Yeah. Right, yeah. You know, I mean, I wouldn't talk about the sexual. But,
no,
hands. But no, I know.
Yes, please do.
But that's true. I mean, that's true. I'm a Scorpio. I take pleasure in my sensuality, you know, and I can like turn a man out. And so I wanted to be able to experience this with somebody who would capture me.
Even the camera man looked away like, what's happening?
No, seriously, you don't have to co-opt your femininity or your sensuality in Christ. And so the one thing about spirituality, when you really have this, for me, the relationship with God, it was very sensual. It's like, you know how people, to prove the point for anybody who don't believe it, how many people say, oh God, when they coming?
You know what?
Hello, hello. Everybody get religious real quick.
I almost told on myself.
And so it was a spiritual erotic moment with me.
I mean, God created sex.
Hello,
he
I'm telling you.
Sex to be used,
and it made it feel good. If not, we wouldn't be sinning, because ain't nobody going to do that to get us here if it wasn't, you know, pleasurable. Yeah. Even though he fooled us with the women bearing children, that was painful. Another conversation with God. But for us to be here, it had to be pleasurable. That's the reason why they, in Africa and other places in the world, they have genitalia mutilation, because the guys know, hey, these women could be as sensual as we are, because it's a two-way street. So we're going to take away her desire for the sex by cutting away the clitoris and the labia around her vagina.
And the clitoris is literally only made for pleasure.
It
has
made
no
for
other
pleasure.
Purpose.
I know. Yeah, right. I mean,
there's nothing else that it does but make you feel good.
Well, God created sex. And that's the pain in birth is because of the fall, because of Eve's sin. But like, he created sex. He meant it to be pleasurable. The only thing is, it's for his context. And so I believe that. And so I'm going to use it. I plan on using it. Again, that's why I'm not celibate. I'm abstinent. Right? I have not made a vow of celibacy, because I do plan on having sex again at some point. Right?
What's the difference between abstinent and celibate? Explain that for me.
So celibacy is a vow that the priests used to, or the popes used to.
Yes. We thought.
They're like, I know, right? Supposedly.
Allegedly.
But celibate means that you're not having sex again. Like, you have taken a vow of celibacy. Whereas abstinent is just, I have chosen to abstain from sex until a certain point in time, or in my case, until an occurrence, as in marriage.
So when people use celibate colloquially, they actually mean abstinent.
They mean
okay,
abstinent.
That makes sense. I'm neither, but that's beautiful. No
judgment.
I'm not judging it. I love it. No, but I think it's interesting that the conversation around sexuality and sensuality and spirituality, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. the more spiritually grounded I become, the mm-hmm. more sensual I feel. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times we need to be careful with how, I don't want to use the word puritanical, but puritanical mm-hmm. religion can sometimes be fed to us, because if you were looking back to Africa, right? In African, like traditional African religions, and because I'm Haitian, I feel like Haitians mm-hmm. are like the one step after like
Absolutely.
Being African, because we barely could stay slaves. Mm-hmm. Like Haitians didn't want no part of being slaves. So I think because of my cultural background, we deify Africa and Haiti. We think Africa is a beautiful thing, and we recognize that there's sensuality in religion. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say, speaking of that, I love that you went from talking about Harriet to talking about Haiti, because I always tell my friends who are not familiar with Haitian culture, mm-hmm. you cannot love the Nat Turners and the Harriet Tubmans and people who defy slavery mm-hmm. and not be looking out for this country that did it first and that wanted
Absolutely.
All of us to be like that. Mm-hmm. And they, you know how back in the slave times, whenever slaves would become free, they would mm-hmm. cut their heads off when they caught them and put them on a stake as a warning to other slaves? Mm-hmm. Haiti is that. Because Haiti was the first like independent Black republic.
And why they still
They kept them
today.
Poor so that nobody else would look for freedom. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. if you're African American, you have a direct tie to wanting to know about Haiti, because that was the warning shot to the rest of the Black people
Absolutely.
In this region of the world. And mm-hmm. so I love that you guys are working with that country, because that poverty is racism.
Yeah.
That poverty was intentionally meant to say, this is the poorest and the freest republic.
Yeah.
And look what happens when Black people get free, they get poor.
When you go to Haiti and you actually see, like, you see it for yourself, it's like I said,
it's punishment.
It's jarring because of how obvious It is, you know, and I constantly, and we were, the bed and breakfast that we stayed at mm-hmm. was so extraordinarily beautiful.
It was gorgeous.
But behind like this steel gate with and men yeah. with guns and stuff like that. And then once you go outside, it's so poor. The streets don't even have names. They've spray painted them on walls what they guessed the name of the street to be. And then Tent City, it was. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was constantly like, it was just my emotions constantly undulating, like joy, sorrow, anger, all of it, all at the same time. So, and then worrying about Little Miss Muffet, worrying
you know
about
what?
Me. So,
and we're back about him.
So, Mama, I don't want to leave off on a sour note because I am really pleased with the transition that Kim has made over the course of time, you know,
especially with the reform.
Exactly. Stuff. And so you posted something on Instagram just a couple of days ago, and I want you to talk a little bit more about that and how Kim was involved and how Dr. Dyson was there as well from the, you know, from the outside looking in, we've got one perspective. Tell us more about that.
Okay. Michael and I went to the D.C. Department of Corrections, joined in with Georgetown University for I think it's called the Prison and Scholars Program. It's amazing. When we walked in, they're given these philosophical, you know, situations into which they were living and questions to Michael during the question and answer period. And this is a place where people who saw Kim Kardashian in D.C. at the correctional facilities is the same program. And what I liked about that and what I liked about Kim before she even got to this particular program for a documentary is the fact that she got the woman in San Francisco out of prison. I believe that's where she was. And I think this is really the core of who she is. Because one thing I didn't know, which I'm going to try to emulate, is I didn't know there was a baby law school that you can actually become a lawyer called baby law. I begged ignorance. Like, you know, baby sharp, I want to be part of that. And I think that this is really who she is authentically. And I also had the pleasure of meeting her and being around her children with Kanye at Robert Smith's a home in Colorado to see not her, but him and his Sunday services with somebody. Hey, but I see how it transformed him. And he's my homeboy from Chicago. And I knew his mother. And I knew that when she passed, the dark cloud that rolled over him. And I think that the union with Kim was really more for Chris because he had that tour de force woman mother figure in his life by marrying Kim, so he got a 2-for-1. Oh, but when you think about
Kim... No one really thinks about it from that perspective.
No, but I do because I knew him personally, and I saw it when he and Jay-Z were doing Watch the Throne, and he was going out there like he was part of that roadrunner, the little alien with the Roman costume. I was like, oh my God, he's in a dark space. And that was after his mother had died. Mm-hmm. And so whether we try to be analyzing his mental health, I know for him, if nobody else thinks he's authentic in that church, he loves the Lord. And that is his salvation. All he's telling people, maybe you want to take this pill with me and know this joy. And I know a lot of his joy, too, comes from his marriage with Kim and their children. 100%.
Okay, I'm just going to say, and then I'm giving it to you guys, because I just have to ask this, because you'll be able to break it down. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile
Kanye,
how do you reconcile, you know, the Sunday service, Jesus is King, Kanye, who you believe is truly, would you say, use the word altruistic in terms of his...
Yeah, I do. With the one that says Bush don't love black people.
Yeah, but how do you reconcile that with the same guy that puts on the Make America Great hat again and says, when I wear this hat, I feel like a superhero? Like, how do you reconcile the two people? Because we know what this hat is. It is a symbol of xenophobia. It's a symbol of hatred. It is a symbol of racism. It has emboldened all of these, you know, white supremacist-leaning folks to come out of the woodworks and feel really proud to scream the N-word in, like, CVS at people. You know what I'm saying?
Well, we act like, first of all, let's back this thing up a little bit. We act as if Trump coming to office was the fault line of racism in America. I'm the sister, like I said, I lived 6.8 decades of life, and there has not been one president in America who's done well for black people, not even the black so-called president, because he said he wasn't running as a black president. And because I have this spirit of Harriet Tubman, I'm not that fearful kind of person who's saying the crazy man is a White House. Racism is systemic in American culture. So when you talk about political freedom, he can have that mega head on, because there are a lot of black people who don't wear it who are supporting Trump for various reasons. One, they say the Democratic Party has not done well for them. And when you talk about democratic socialism and people talking about hating wealth, hold up, Nipsey Hussle was trying to create wealth here for black people. Mm-hmm. Robert F. Smith is trying to create wealth for black people, and he's done more just absorbing the debt of student loans for Morehouse students and their parents than a government for 400 years have ever done for Americans. So I back up to Kanye. So I don't know what's in his head and why he was there, but there's a great displeasure and a movement called Blacksit from the Democratic Party. Now, we also have to put in context that everybody, though I said we cannot psychoanalyze him because that's not my profession, saying whatever is in his head, he has us thinking about our loyalty to a party who has not been loyal to us, whether he has the head or not. And that's a very deep conversation that we need to address as African-American people like that. So how can you go from that? Okay, if he's bipolar, you can accept the extreme. I don't care about people's politics, because when it comes to voting day and you're pissed off about Kanye, then you go to the voting booth and you vote for the person that you want. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to hate on him on that. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I don't try to reconcile it and figure out why he's doing that no more than AOC, who's talking about climate change, and that, you know, Meatless Sunday by de Blasio talking about don't give kids meat on Monday, and that could be their only protein, while they're wearing leather shoes and drinking bottled water and flying jets. It's very complex. It's like relationships in our religion. So I don't really get that nitpicking with that, because everybody chooses a church, they choose societies, they choose cliques based upon what's going on in their hearts or not. So maybe after seeing that, like a whole lot of blacks see it, and I know it. I mean, I know all the congressional black members, and you go to their districts and people, I remember, let me back this up. I'm from Chicago, almost 3,000 shootings a year, over 700 murders a year. A black president came and landed on my city and went to the White House and rolled up the carpet of hope, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm saying Michael went on Bill Maher's show and Bill Maher said the white N-word. People are having fit. I'm from the Chicago. I'm a nigga. I can say nigga because I'm part of the tribe. I tweet out, I'm more concerned about niggas killing niggas in Chicago than a white man who wants to join this particular group of us. Mm. John Legend was going to roll up on me on social media saying I was parroting Trump's talking points. The B word almost came out. You figure it out. Because in 1985, because the formation of gangs was so bad with Mr. Gardner, who used to own South Sheen products, we had a black on black love campaign. We tried to go via positiva, the negativa, but I could see it and sense it in my spirit. So I'm saying, black lives matter when it's blue and black, but not when black lives matter must mean no matter who has the weapon and shooting, when you see mothers crying. I had friends sitting in their homes and shot. My sister friend lives on a street corner with the police cars there every day. The children crying. And the thing that in my international travel and getting to the cultural diplomacy aspect of my life is that when I went to the Middle East or go to Haiti, the difference between the children in Haiti, because art is so indigenous in them, they have what people pay hundreds of dollars for, art therapy, because they took those used oil bottles and made cars with them. They took the fallen rubble art that we took millions of Sharpies down so they could just scribble it and sold, called black tourism in Haiti. They could do kites. You go to the Middle East and Zaatari refugee camp, you see this blank whiteness like a couch. I saw in the Middle East what my children are suffering in the Midwest city of Chicago, the lack of opportunity for an age of innocence as a child.
Wow.
So I had to tell the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, that you made us think that terrorists will grow men. No, it's not. It are children everywhere without the age of innocence, the opportunity for trial and error to build character. So all that aspect lends back to my political borings, because I go globally and I hear more than the average American. Half the shit that we see on television or CNN or MSNBC or Fox News, they only know half truths. I'm bringing some information. So it's a little bit different for me. And that's the reason why I don't nitpick the small things, because one thing that we have a right to do and what we should all be checking for if we're concerned more about our rights rather than how long Trump would be in office is that the Voting Rights Act can go up and be dissolved at any moment if we're not on our watch.
Yeah. I'm so happy you said all of that. I agree with you on some. Mm-hmm. I really need her to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm very passionate about politics. I lived in DC for 12 years. I just moved to LA 6 months ago.
Okay. So this Hollywood stuff. Yeah, I know.
Politics, this is my bag right here, right?
Okay.
But there's one thing that Melissa said that struck me, and that you're talking about politicians and politics and political parties. Mm-hmm. We 100% agree with that. Mm-hmm. Here's where this loses me, though. I understand what Kanye is doing. He has his right to political affiliation. I also agree that the two-party system is completely broken.
Yeah.
However, the FBI statistically analyzed the day that Trump got elected, the next day, was the highest rate of hate crimes that whole year. So I'm not concerned about, to me, the issue isn't with his political affiliation or with Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. It's that there's latent, inactive racism that has now been emboldened to hit us on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
That was not happening before. For Trump.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
politically, it might just be everybody passing around a party joint. They would say the joke that the Bushes and the Clintons were passing around the party joint and there's a presidency, right? So yes, politically, they're all the same thing wearing different colors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But on the ground, that hat has actually statistically emboldened a group of people who weren't trying to kill us before.
Yeah.
And that is a difference that wasn't happening during the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And also, we have to be really careful with black on black because statistically speaking, all people kill their own the most.
You kill where you live, as Michael was
everybody,
saying.
There's no such thing as black on black crime. Unless y'all start saying white on white crime, please do not say black on black crime around me.
Yeah.
Because when you say black on black crime, you make it seem as if black people are pathologically more violent than others, and actually we're not.
And that,
no, we're
not. And that's, and yeah, and that's part of the frustration. I mean, that's part of the frustration that I also see in comment section is like, it's always, you know, it's always a red herring just being thrown out when there's a conversation being had. You know, it's just like, it's a distractionary measure and it pisses me off. I'm like, can we just stay at the topic at hand? Whenever somebody's criticizing Trump, it's just like, well, Obama. No, we're talking about somebody specific. Why is there always like this comparison?
Because they want to look in the mirror. They
but they're all the same.
But to your point is that when I say because of racism and because we're so fragmented and with the identity politics, when I talked about Chicago, I went very narrow on my scope of my global citizenry is I was concerned since this is tribal or gang, I was concerned about my gang. It wasn't the Crips or the Blood, wasn't wearing red and blue, it was about the black. So I wanted to, first of all, say you're absolutely right because as Michael always says and remind us, it's you kill where you live, you know? So, And so since we're the minority population, so if we looked at the real numbers, white people are killing white people, or Latins are killing Latins because of whatever numbers are largest. But I was thinking of it more in terms of my explanation earlier is that I was just feeling it so close to me because it was home, and I want to look at that. I wanted an opportunity for Obama. All he had to do was go back to Chicago, and he didn't have to say nothing. Not to go to University of Chicago and talk to the kids who've made it, but walk in the streets where people have been shot. So that hope that you had promised that they had thought from Chicago specifically, not the big black pride, but specifically for Chicago, all you had to do was stand where they had fallen to make a difference. So for me, it was tribalism, but I totally agree. It's not their hat. It's not, you know, just that. And you're right. And what, on a spiritual level, what the red hat signal is like Pandora's box. All the spirits, you're absolutely right. It's almost like, and so much to the point that I called a couple of my friends and said, like, damn, did the rapture happen? I'm here with all these bitches? You know, seriously.
Okay, you know.
Seriously. Because my grandsons, we live in the richest district in Washington, D.C., the third ward. Uh-huh. Both of my grandsons are now at the school because little white kids called them niggas, told them that because of their color, they couldn't be this or that, or called my grandson inferior. There was a little girl in kindergarten, beautiful, ebony color like you ladies, honey colored, you know, more melanin blessed than I am. And they, in kindergarten, little girls told her she could never be Princess Jess. She could never be a princess. Actually tried to choke her and push her out of swing.
See, this is why I don't
see
have
kids. See what I'm saying?
I'm
with you on that. So like I said, the complexity, and I hate about the most... Heart. The reason why when you see children, the crease in suicide, I mean, I would too. That breaks my heart too. The complexity of the life in which they live. I almost wish it was just black and white racism. I know you don't like me. I don't like you. Good. Let's go. Let's let this rough friction be as it is. Yeah. But because it had been surface and then it went underground, now it's this whole identity politics. Are you straight? Are you gay? Are you Christian? What Christian? Are you Pentecost? It is a headache to wake up.
So I'd say it's a fucking mess.
Headache.
So we're gonna. What I heard from you is we're doing a whole episode on tribalism.
Yes, we should do it. Because that in itself is an hour. And you're coming back for that. And this whole cancel culture, because I'm quite sure people probably cancel me when I say Trump don't matter, black on black, what does Black Lives Matter really mean to Black people in our tribalism?
It's almost like, there's only you can't question things like that.
And it's fair to critique Black Lives Matter because it was created by queer Black women and it's been co-opted by Black men.
And just, so and then yeah. about white people.
Just like hashtag MeToo was co-opted.
Yeah. Right. Hello, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Can we have anything?
Nothing. No, no, we created, but can we keep anything?
We have everything. Thanks to Popeyes, we can't even keep a fried chicken breast and live. You know, I mean, okay, I digress, and I did want sandwiches.
That's the note that I want to know.
Okay,
but Chantal, so I gave them homework before they came. Okay. Before they came in, I was just like, okay, so we've got a spitfire powerhouse woman coming in here. I need you guys to do as much research as possible, and you unearthed this article that was written by her.
Yes, you wrote an article for on LinkedIn called it was about cultural diplomacy, and as an artist and specifically a writer and now a speaker, and specifically considering what this podcast is about, mm-hmm. I just think our audience would like to know a little bit more about cultural diplomacy and why you think that it's so important for us.
Okay.
That's a great question.
When I grew up in the 50s, I grew up very poor. So you watch movies. There was a movie called 100 Days Around the World, mm-hmm. based off the book of Jules Verne's. And so they had this buffalo run that they do in Palmetto, I think it's called. Then the guy with going to France with the beret on his head. And I saw myself in this colorful world. Remember, I went from black and white TV. So one of the first movies I'm seeing is in Technicolor, and the world was alive to me. And I wanted to visit that. And then I saw the film, The Diary of Anne Frank. Now, this girl was Jewish, actually took her life, ended in Amsterdam, but there was something about her sadness, this hiding, that resonated with me, so that when my mother would leave to work as a short order cook, if I heard a police siren or a fire truck, it translated to that da-da-da-da-da-da, and I would hide under the bed. Now, that was about literacy in the film genre that moved my life. And I would ask my older siblings, like, did y'all feel that? And they looked at me like, oh, Marcia's crazy, which I always have been precocious, and my mother probably felt that I was. But fast forward, when we look at nature, you could tell how the climates were something that happened seismic in the world by cutting the tree, the rings of life, could tell someone about what happened at that time. For me, it's culture. People didn't understand why, not when the Black churches were bombed, not only because the lives that were lost, because of the history that they represented. That's why I cried when the Notre Dame cried, because I had been there. I knew the history behind it, not only in literature.
The Notre Dame fire, yeah.
That the fire, or when I travel a lot in the Middle East, when I see the ruins destroyed, the first mm-hmm. thing terrorists do is they take away the music. Mm-hmm. They burn the art. Even in Nazi Germany, they burn all the art. I mean, I cry and I weep at this, because like with Haiti, the greatest expression you can have, the greatest gift that God gives person, is their opportunity to create and add beauty to the life. Yeah. So while people are running up on, you know, other folks, I said, darn, I wish I could sing. How do you get these melodies? Or how did Mozart, how do you get this hymn of the universe? Or artists, I just absolutely love it. And literacy, you know? Yeah. And when you think about that, then these are things that give us joy in life. So when I travel the world, I look for those things. And I think it's a great expression, because it's the one gift that we can all have. I can sing in the shower. We can all write. We can all paint. But if we can't do those things, it's those mini vacations that we can go to a museum. We can go watch a good film. We can listen to some good music. Yeah. You know,
it feeds the soul.
You could. It really heals the soul. It's that thing that really tames the salvage breast. Is the accuracy of it, and not the beast, because the breast is where the heart sits. And we are the first thing I tell people. Think about it. You know who the first fashion designer was? That is recorded was God when he did them fig leaves for Eve. Like, oh, let me do
you
something.
Know, I'm expecting a joke.
Okay. No, so that is a joke.
Oh, my God.
No.
That's the Bible joke of the week, guys.
It's
Bible
like,
joke
right.
of the week.
So, and ever since, you still, when you see a dress with leaves, like, they like, they're kind of like taking that from God, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, you should have a lawsuit.
Do you see why, like, I'm obsessed with her? Like, why I love her so much? I mean, we have that in common, where literacy was... it was my kind of eye-opener to how big the world actually was before I even could conceptualize it by my own travels as an adult. And it just... art, culture is the gift that we give each other.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And it, like you, it breaks my heart when I do see terrorists in the Middle East, like how mm-hmm. they were like just ransacking museums and destroying art and destroying artifacts and destroying, you know,
ancient text.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was. I was like, I feel sorry for everybody. I feel sorry for us as a collective being, because we're losing something that is beyond, that has no measurement of value, because it's invaluable. And that's why I always encourage people to travel. Mm-hmm. Expand your minds, expand your horizons. Understand that this world is so enormous and you're just like this tiny little fragment in it. Mm-hmm. And in order to become, I guess, a better human.
A global citizen.
Yeah.
It resonates, and I do a lot of cultural trips and we'll be taking some people on that. But even when art was so important, we think of the cave drawings. We learn history. We understood what they were going through. When you go to Pompeii, we think about life being sanctified. Girl, you go to Pompeii where the volcano erupted. Mm-hmm. Girl, the walls are like penthouse and Playboy extreme because of the bathhouse and the prostitutions, which a lot of women made their profit from, and which was sanctioned almost. You know, when you look at the gladiators, you know, or the former, the philosophers, Socrates and Plato, the reason why they had all male apprentices because they were also their sexual pleasure. Mm-hmm. And so we can have a conversation on sexuality, bisexuality, and the whole gender conversation that we have, which is really rooted in history way before people said, oh God, now the sex god and came along and the rapture is over. We need to talk about that, because for me, we're talking about, for those who say that they love God and God have them to love, the biggest sin is judging. As soon as you judge, so heterosexual, nobody talks about adultery, incest, or rape. They want to talk about somebody, other ways to which they perform their love. Mm-hmm. All I know is that we are to love God. I said, you know, and I can tell you a story later on that's in Judges that kind of like hints to that. I call it spiritual homoeroticism up here in the Bible. Yo, okay. Because I have performed same-sex marriages. I wrote an article for Essence Magazine in 1999 called When Preachers Pray, talking about the sexual exploitation of the ministers in the black church. And the most painful story to me was a woman who was a seminarian who told me that she went to a male minister for help and guidance because she was confused with it. So he decided to rape her into her being straight, who was the sinner.
Oh, we're having so many more conversations.
Okay, so, yeah. And so that's a complexity.
Disgusting.
So it's all life is so complex. And all I ask people to do, one thing that I've learned to do, is find your simple road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First and foremost, do no harm. That's the only thing that, except for my neighbor, which we have to come back and talk about. Other than that.
So you forgot the first part. Take no shit.
Take no shit.
But do no harm.
Yeah.
Take no shit and do no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Take no shit and do no harm. Because when you do see Harriet, remember, Harriet was a scout and a spy. Not only did she not lose anybody, she didn't kill nobody. Can you imagine that?
Oh, wow.
She didn't kill anybody. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, one-to-one, when she was part of the naval scout, if she was the person who aimed a gun, she may have shot, but for the record, we have known that she has not killed anybody that is recorded to my knowledge. So the weaponry is of a choice, but if when you can, you don't. But if somebody roll up on me, I do have a 9mm Glock and I have a good practice.
So,
okay? I'm so sorry.
No. So do you see what happens to me? I was having a difficult time moderating this conversation because when she starts talking, I'm rendered speechless and silent. All I do is stare at her. Like,
no, you're a gift. Hearing her talk actually made me think about my server tip of the day. You know how we always do it.
Yeah, so
the
we
day?
Do it. Yeah, mama. Okay, so we do it. Because this show's called I'm Here for the Food. We tend to have like an appetizer conversation, which is when we sit down and we do the introduction, just like, what were we up to? And da da da, okay, we all got braids. Woo! And then this was.
Is that what happened?
Just I braid my hair.
Yeah. This was, you know, so the meat and potatoes was the entree, which you served up with panache as per usual. So we tend to end the conversation with like server tip of the day, the gratitude that we want to pay, you know, pay forward. So. I don't even know. From what she had to say, server tip of the day.
No, I think you have a beautiful soul, by the way, and that's always the biggest compliment I can give to people, because you can't fake that.
You can be pretty
on the outside and ugly on the inside, and it'll seep through. Like, you clearly have a beautiful soul. I'm begging you, please come back.
Yes.
Right. Melissa, we'll pick you up from the airport. We'll figure that out. But, like, I think what I am being reminded of, because, you know, all truth is universal, and then you meet people who remind you of that truth, right, mm-hmm. is that when Trump got elected, the next day, my friends were all devastated, understandably.
Happened on my birthday.
Right. Oh, yeah. Boy, we'll talk about that.
41 sucked.
And the one thing I could think of as a silver lining is, and then this comes back to me being Haitian and understanding how mm-hmm. struggle and art are connected, mm-hmm. is that the most beautiful art usually comes from the ugliest times. Mm-hmm. And I was like, because he got elected, we're going to weep, but we're also going to create in ways that we never could have before. Mm-hmm. So there's a beauty in this moment right now where mm-hmm. there's a renaissance that's happening. Mm-hmm. We've all noticed yeah. it in Hollywood. There's a black renaissance that's happening right. with art mm-hmm. that I think is directly yeah. connected to what's happening as far as the pain on the street. Mm-hmm. So if you are a creative, if you are someone who expresses yourself, this is the time where you want to make sure that you are feeding your art mm-hmm. because absolutely. Art is activism. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when our children learn about this time, you want to be able to say that you're on the right side of history. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to tell them that you were talking the good talk, you were creating beautiful things, and you were reminded about how to live while you were in the middle of all this adversity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think for you, you just reminded me that I need to create even more because of what we're going through, not in spite of it.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'll piggyback off you for my server tip of the day. I think that as we continue to create art, we talked about Kanye a little bit, and is his change really authentic? Mm-hmm. And I think what we have to do is not look at how people choose to create art and what they choose to say, but to genuinely take what they're saying, to give people a license to change. Because for me, if I was trying to change my life and then all these people are saying, well, that's fake, that would be a lot harder for me to walk in this change. Mm-hmm. And as someone who has changed their life, you know, it's not our responsibility to judge how people can or cannot change and then what they choose to do with their voice on the other side of that change. It's just to partake in the art and really appreciate it and then let that inspire us to mm-hmm. then use our voice and create our art to help that.
Yeah. So. Mama, what would your server tip of the day be?
Well, mine would have to do with agriculture. I'll end being Reverend Marcia Dyson. There's a scripture that says you have to break up the fallow ground. And for people in agribusiness, that means the ground has become so solid that it can't be fruitful. So when I look at the Trump era, and I told people this, we needed that craziness like mm-hmm. a sledgehammer digging up the ground because we had become so complacent in our politics, because then we can throw our seeds of activism or artistic acuity to make things grow beautifully, and we all have that moment to do it right now. If not, the soil would become calcitrant again, and we never will flourish, and people will not be able to understand that beauty and see ourselves as part of nature that spiritually and culturally we bring individually into this world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, my server tip of the day is to follow Marcia L. Dyson on Instagram. And don't ask her to adopt you, because I'm very territorial and it's not going to fucking happen. But you can learn from this incredibly wise woman who is literally a national, international treasure. And she has, like, she at least holds, like, about 60% of my heart. I literally, you know, my mom is great. But Lord have mercy. I was blessed the day that we crossed paths, and I was further blessed at the fact that we had such, you know, like saw so much of each other in, you know, ourselves inside of each other. And I'm so grateful for you, and I'm so thankful that you were able to come, and y'all got a sermon and a half today. So on that note, we're going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I want to encourage you guys to hit a 5-star review on iTunes and YouTube. And every episode lands on Tuesdays.
Tuesdays.
10 a.m.
It's going up on Tuesdays.
PST, 1 p.m. EST. And thank you guys for joining us. Take care.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
If you like our show and the content we're featuring, please hit subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to us. iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and just like your Uber driver asks, leave us a 5-star rating. Also, please leave us a review about your favorite part of the show or your number one takeaway from the episode. We read all the reviews, and this will only help us curate the content that you want to see and hear. Thanks, guys.